So we welcome everyone to Krishna Balaram Temple, and today we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 9th chapter, text 29. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Esa hi Brahmana Vidvam Tapasila Gunavita Ariradhesur Brahma Mahapurusa Samhitam Sarva Bhutatma Bhavena Bhutesu Antaritam Gune Esa. This he indeed Brahmana, a qualified Brahman, Vidvan, learned in Vedic knowledge, Tapa, austerity, Sila, good behavior, Gunanvita, endowed with all good qualities, Ariradhyesu, desiring to be engaged in worshipping, Brahma, the Supreme Brahman, Mahapurusha, the Supreme Person, Krishna, Samgitam, known as Sarvabhuta, of all the living entities, Atma Bhavena, as the Supersoul, Bhutesu, in every living entity, Antarhitam, with the core of the heart, Gunei, by qualities. Translation and proper by His Divine Guest A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation: here is a learned, highly qualified Brahmana engaged in performing austerities and eagerly desiring to worship the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul who lives within the core of the heart in all living entities. Prabhupada: the wife of a Brahmana did not regard her husband as a superficial Brahmana who was called a Brahmana merely because he was born of a Brahman family. Rather, this Brahmana was actually qualified with the Brahmanical symptoms. Yasya yal lakshanam proktam, Bhagavatam 7.11.35. The symptoms of a Brahmana are stated in the Shastra. Samo damas tapasocham shanti rajvam evacha jnanam vijnanam astikyam Brahma karma svabhavanjam. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, wisdom, knowledge and religiousness. These are the qualities by which a Brahmana's work. Not only must a Brahmana be qualified, but he must also engage in Brahmanical activities. Simply to be qualified is not enough. One must engage in a Brahmana's duties. The duty of a Brahmana is to know the Param Brahma, Krishna. Param Brahma, Param Dham, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan. Because this Brahmana was actually qualified and was also engaged in Brahmanical activities, Brahma Karma, killing him would be a greatly sinful act. And the Brahmana's wife requested that he not be killed.
Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Prashatade Satarine Everyone, Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I think we can do a lot better. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So everyone can repeat. Here is a learned, highly qualified Brahmana, engaged in performing austerity and eagerly desiring to worship the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul, who lives within the core of the heart in all living entities. Srila Prabhupada, in the first canto of Bhagavatam, he speaks about Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan, and he says, Vedanta tat tattva vidas tattvam yagya yam advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaneti Sabdayate. And he explains that the absolute truth is both subject and object, and there is no qualitative difference. Therefore, Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan are qualitatively one and the same. The same substance is realized as impersonal Brahman by the students of the Upanishads, as localized Paramatma by the Hiranyagarbhas or the yogis, and the Bhagavan by the devotees. In other words, Bhagavan or the personality of Godhead is last word of the absolute truth. See how Prabhupada highlights that he is the last word in the absolute truth. Paramatma is partial representation of the personality of Godhead, and the impersonal Brahman is the glowing effulgence of the personality of Godhead, as the sun rays are to the sun god. And then Prabhupada stresses less intelligent students of either of the above schools sometimes argue in the favor of their own respective realization. But those who are perfect seers of the absolute truth know well that the above three features of the one absolute truth are different perspective views seen from different angles of vision. As it is explained in the first sloka of the first chapter of Bhagavatam, the supreme truth is self-sufficient, cognizant and free from the illusion of relativity. In the relative world, the knower is different from the known, but in the absolute truth, both the knower and the known are one and the same thing. In the relative world, the knower is the living spirit or superior energy, whereas known is inert matter or inferior energy. Therefore, there is duality of inferior and superior energy. Whereas in the absolute realm, both the knower and the known are of the same superior energy. There are three kinds of energies of the supreme energetic. There is no difference between the energy and energetic, but there is a difference in quality of energies. The absolute realm and the living entities are the same superior energy, but the material world is inferior energy. The living being in contact with the inferior energy is illusion, thinking the belongings that he belongs to the inferior energy. Therefore, there is a sense of relativity in the material world. In the absolute, there is no such sense of difference between the knower and the known, and therefore, everything is absolute. Very nicely Prabhupada highlights this so we can understand Paramatma, Bhagavan and the differences in the absolute truth. And we can see how Prabhupada says that the living entities being contact in the inferior energy is illusion. So everyone who comes to the material world, some or another, we are in contact with the inferior energy. Just like in this chapter where we are talking about the dynasty of the Amsuman, King Saudasan
He was a Raj Rishi, but he also was in contact with the material energy. And naturally, being a king, he used to go out hunting. And as he was hunting, then he saw two cubs. But being a Raj Rishi, if he had meditated enough, he might have seen the demons and not the cubs. But he saw the cubs and he felt, okay, let me kill them. Normally, when you see cubs or puppies or kittens, they are very cute. Even natural human beings would not think of killing them. But as a king, for some reason, he fell into the illusion and he decided to kill them. So he shot one arrow and he killed one of the cubs, which turned out to be a demon. And then the other demon exhibited himself and said, I will come back for you. You kill my brother, I'll come back for you. Now this is the material world, the nature of material world is like that, right? You hit me one, I'll hit you two, you hit me three, I'll hit you four. You know, right? It feels good sometimes, but it hurts also and it's painful, right? So this is what was happening here, you know. And as a result of his activity, not acting on the platform as Raj Rishi, you know, he got a very heavy reaction. These demons, somehow or another, explained in the previous verse that he became a cook in his house or in his kingdom, and he offered, you know, flesh, human flesh, to Vasishtha. Now Vasishtha has come, and Vasishtha, he realizes there's something wrong in the offering, in the so-called prasadam plate. He was able to analyze that it was not normal prasadam. But again, somehow or another, due to the power of illusion, or maybe what you may call ignorance, that he did not look further as to why there was flesh in his plate. Whenever we perceive something, whenever we see something that is wrong, it is important for us to look at it in greater depth and see why there is a correction factor required, why there is something wrong. Don't just accept the fact on hearsay or on just seeing something and seeing that, okay, there is something wrong here, you know, so it's got to be taken care of, but it should be taken care of properly. Vasishtha cursed. He cursed the king. And then he realized that he had made a big mistake. As he realized that king had been tricked by a demon. This demon had somehow or another very cleverly tricked both the king and the rishi. Now if you look at the category, you can see Vasishtha Muni, he's a rishi. If you look at how many generations, he's been in this dynasty for many generations. Even before Lord Ram appears, there is at least 11 generations of tapasyas that are being performed. And then Lord Ram is appearing. So in that dynasty, Vasishtha Muni, somehow or another, he's blessed, he's empowered to be the guru of the royal dynasties. One generation after another. You know, you would just think, probably think how many generations, it should be some kind of long beard going all over the floor and mats and things like that. That would be a material perception. But he was a very special soul that was empowered, that was blessed to come and guide the royal families, generations after generation, you know. And some of those Rajarishis are highlighted because they were extraordinary, like Bhagirath, you know. And then some, like Sudarshana, they are highlighted because they made a mistake. So we can learn from the pastimes of the different royal leaders as to what each personality did in the form of performing tapasya. Like Bhagirath performed extraordinary tapasya that he was able to invite Mother Ganges, whereas his father and forefathers were not able to. That was extraordinary tapasya. He was just so determined. He was just so determined that no matter what happens, I will perform this tapasya so I can bring the Ganges down so that all my ancestors can be delivered. He was so determined. On the other hand, because King Sudas was cursed, he went out and he was so determined. And in this case, not hunting only, but in this case, he was so determined to eat a brahmana, a live human being. He had no mercy, despite the brahmani, his wife, brahmana's wife, was pleading, was educating him that, look, you are a Rajarishi. Your real constitution is that you are a king. How can you be acting like this? This is a brahmana. He's a true brahmana. He's not brahmana by birth. He's a very highly qualified brahmana. He's exceptionally a good personality for your kingdom and your denizens. But did he listen? No. You know, they say when a lion is hungry or a lioness is hungry, you know, normally they're sleeping. When their stomach is satisfied, you go past them, they will not attack you. But when a lion is hungry, there will definitely be one death. No. And it's not necessarily that it will only pray for another animal. If any one of us happen to be there, then we'll be the first one because we can't run as fast as the other animals. Right? Recently I saw on YouTube that there is lions and tigers in some certain parts of South India. You might have seen that. That in the evening time they hide in the bushes. And they suddenly come up, wallop, and you're going on your bike, and you're gone. It's true. See it on the YouTube, is there? You know? So when a lion or lioness is hungry, there is no mercy for anyone. Same thing when a rakshasa is hungry, you know, there is no mercy. He could not do any sravanam and have understanding that, look, this is a brahmana in my dynasty. He's a very valuable personality. You know, I should preserve him so that my denizens will benefit, so I will benefit. No. So he went ahead and devoured this brahmana. This was the condition. You know, it's so sad that when there is a hunger strike within the system, we as human beings will do anything to satisfy this 6-inch piece of flesh within our mouth. No? Although, I think 2 days ago we read in the morning, Prabhupada says, utilize your tongue in 2 very specific services. One is Nam Seva, right? Prabhupada says, engage your tongue in Nam Seva. And the other one is saying, eat prasadam. Because Nam Seva, Nam and Krishna are non-different, he explains. And because Krishna and Krishna's prasadam is non-different, then you will get purified. And you will be saved from these demoniac situations. Otherwise, it's so easy to fall prey. It's very easy that when we are traveling, when we are outside and you see something, and the tendency is that we fall into the mode of ignorance, we are hungry, and we go to the first donut shop or the first samosa shop, we buy something, and it's very easy to forget to even offer it. Or it's very easy, like Prabhupada said, if you buy something that's not cooked by devotees, then you should beg Guru and Gauranga to protect you. You can't offer. Certain things that are not cooked by devotees, you cannot offer. But under dire circumstances only, he says that yes, that you can. I think he said that on an aeroplane one time, right? That if you have not eaten for several days and you have to eat that piece of bread, that the hostesses, air hostesses bring to you, then you fold your hands and you beg for protection. Don't offer it. You can't offer it. It's not offerable to Krishna. But because you need to keep the soul and the body together, henceforth, he says you can do that, you know. And the general tendency is here, in this case, the king, he was very busy. He wanted to be engaged in fruitive activity, you know. When one engages in fruitive activity, then one is simply endeavoring to satisfy the body. Remember, the soul and the body are two separate, you know, elements. Whenever there is a fruitive activity, it means there is karma involved, because you are trying to satisfy the eyes, the mouth, the nose, all the senses of the body. And therefore, there will always be some reaction. However, through the soul, and if the soul controls the mind and the intelligence and the activities, then all the senses can be engaged in the service to Krishna. And when we are engaged in the service to Krishna, then that will help us. You know, we can do cross-checks on ourselves. You know, we read this like samodamastaposocham so many times, this is the qualities of a brahmana. But how many times do you actually stop and say, well, where do I stain in my life in respect to sama? Where do I stain in my life to peacefulness? Am I really peaceful? Am I really a peaceful devotee in my life? When I am amongst the other devotees, how peaceful am I? When I am amongst the crowds and distributing books or preaching, how peaceful am I? Am I self-controlled? Really, am I? Do I perform austerities? These royal families perform austerities for more than 11 generations so that Lord Ram could appear. You know, and these extraordinary personalities who are performing extraordinary austerities, which are inconceivable for a normal human being. Am I performing austerities that Srila Prabhupada gave me? Then simple, you know. Am I doing my sadhana bhakti at least? Do I really stain? Do I really control my tongue? Do I really chant the holy name? When I am chanting the holy name, am I realizing that Nam Seva means it's my time for a personal association with Krishna? Am I really associating with Krishna? Or am I calling upon Him and neglecting Him or ignoring Him? You know? We preach all the time that Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. We preach and we explain to them that every time you call out for Krishna, Krishna is jumping on your tongue. But then when I am chanting my 16 rounds, how many times have I really called upon Krishna, and how many times I really seen Krishna? How many times I said, Krishna, bless me so I do not deviate from my association with you? No? This is the only austerity really required in this age, that you perform sadhana bhakti, you perform nam seva with love and devotion. Be determined that it is my time with Krishna. Same thing, if you're taking prasadam, if you keep forgetting that you should take prasadam very peacefully, very lovingly, because you're associating with Krishna, go on the YouTube and click Prabhupada taking prasadam, or respecting prasadam. You see how Prabhupada sits nicely, he folds his legs, he sits quietly, there's no disturbance, and then he relishes the prasadam. When devotees are with each other and we are doing kirtan, we enjoy ourselves. We are dancing, we are clapping, playing mridanga, kartals, whatever. The same bhava has to be there when we are partaking prasadam. When we partake prasadam, we should follow Prabhupada's footsteps. We cannot be Prabhupada, but we can follow in his footsteps on the simple principles of life that help us, to advance in our spiritual life. And these are the very basic fundamental things that we have a tendency to ignore, and then we question, I have been here for 40 years, 30 years, 25 years, I don't know how many centuries, but Krishna is not being kind to me. It's so easy, isn't it? It's so easy to blame somebody else. See, when Vasistha made a mistake, he not only had caused and had asked the Rishi to make do atonement, but he himself atoned for 12 years. You know, when we make a mistake and we have to atone for 1 hour, you know, mind becomes so agitated, right? Why I am being asked to atone? Right? Sometimes the authorities tell us that, like, okay, you make a big mistake. You didn't turn up to offer the arati to Krishna Balaram, for example. Or you didn't cook. Or you didn't do whatever you're supposed to do. Or you offended all the devotees. So therefore, for 1 day or 2 days, you have to do this or do that. And it becomes very difficult and challenging for the mind that is in ignorance, you know. Like Prabhupada says in this purport here, that the less intelligent, they cannot understand. They cannot understand who the absolute truth is, you know. But when that situation arises, we should voluntarily go for atonement, because the atonement helps us to become more purified. You know, like in the deity worship book, we are also instructed, when we instruct and we train the new brahmanas, if you are late by more than 30 seconds, it is an offense. You know that? Late then more than by 30 seconds, not 30 minutes, 30 seconds, not 1 minute, 30 seconds. It's an offense, and therefore we have to atone. So either you chant extra rounds or you read one chapter of Bhagavad Gita and then you beg for forgiveness. So that way you will not be late again. It's for our personal advancement. We have to do these things. Because if we don't do that, then we fall in the mode of ignorance. How? A simple example. When you come for the first time to Vrindavan, anyone is here for the first time? Okay. Anyone here for second time? Anyone who's been here countless time? So the first time you come, you're thinking, Vrindavan, I'm going to Vrindavan, because you heard of Krishna, you heard of Radharani, you heard of the gopis, the coward boys, the peacocks and parrots, and you know, and you're looking forward to come to Vrindavan. You come here, you stop the taxi as soon as you enter Vrindavan, you get out of the taxi or the car, and you pay dandavas, you know. And the bhav is so intense, you know. But then when you've been here several times, and if you've been living here, then this is very serious. We have to take it very seriously. If you've been living here for a long time, don't fall into the mode thinking that, okay, now it's okay, Vrindavan is Vrindavan. I'm here, I'm more important. And how do you see that difference? You, first of all, the first time you paid dandavas. Second time maybe you did pay dandavas. Third time you come and you take a little raj and you sprinkle it over your, you know, I'm getting purified, right? I'm trying to be a brahmana. And then gradually, if you're staying here for a long time, you even forget to sprinkle the dust. No? Just see how the mind works, how the illusion takes over. That we even forget to pay respect to the braj on daily basis. A simple dandavas, we fail to do that. You know, and we think it's okay. The same piece of land, this is a land where Radha and Krishna and the gopis and the sakhas and their eternal associates, the cows, the peacocks, you know, the mumblebees, everyone, you know, who comes with them, they purified this place so much so that even when Lord Shiva annihilates the entire universe, this piece, the Vrindavan, does not get annihilated. This is how important this place is. So don't let the ego take over. Don't fall into the illusion. Like Prabhupada said, don't fall into the low-class intelligent students. When you stay here, the more you come here, the more advanced we should get. Maybe when we are paying the dandavas, we should rub our nose, rub our forehead, and ask for the mercy. The real mercy is here. No? If you don't ask for that mercy, then we are failing. No? We should become more vibrant. No? Don't look at the gutters and the monkeys and everything else and think, oh, what kind of Vrindavan is this? No? I think Prabhupada gave one example about the orange. No? The orange, he says, that when you have an orange, you have to peel the orange to get to the real fruit. No? So when you come to Vrindavan, don't just play with the peel. Work yourself way through the pill so that you can relish the spiritual consciousness. So that you can relish Krishna consciousness. This is how we should be, you know, developing our bhava, our love, you know. And it will only come through some sincere practice, some sincere devotion, and some sincere sravanam, you know. When you hear Bhagavatam class, hear Prabhupada's classes on the lectures, lectures on the YouTube as many times as you can, you know. Do some extra reading when you are here, you know. Go to Radha Damodar temple, you know. Prabhupada's, you know, performed so much tapasya at Radha Damodar temple. He was literally crying so that, you know, he would get the mercy to fulfill the instructions of his spiritual master, you know. Every night he was sweeping Radha Damodar temple. You mentioned that, right? Every night Prabhupada was mentioning, he would sweep the Radha Damodar temple from inside around the Goswami samadhis, and he would call upon the Goswamis to bestow mercy upon him so that he could fulfill the mission of preaching and spreading the holy name throughout the world. So just as much as if a rakshasa came in front of you, or if you saw a lion, you would not take it for granted. My humble request is, don't take your spiritual life for granted after some time. Think like Vaishya Shikhar Prabhu mentioned that as soon as we become initiated, then the tendency is that as soon as we become Prabhus, we start competing with Lord Chaitanya. No, we fall into that trap. Don't do that. Please, be alert, be conscious. Lion can attack you anytime, a rakshasa can attack you anytime, but if you are Krishna conscious, then when there is sun, there is no darkness. When there is Krishna, you know, no lions will come your way, no rakshasas will come your way. You know, only joy for the soul will come. Because as long as we are focusing our activities on fruitive activities for the body, then there will be problems. But we transcend, we rise above that, and we become, at least sincerely endeavor to become a true Vaishnava, then Krishna will bless us. Thank you very much for being here and listening to me. If there is any comments or questions, they are welcome at this time. Hari Bol. Switch it on. It's probably. Nice question. How can we be extremely cautious so that we don't jump to one extreme and then become a bipolar and go to the negative extremes? Like that, yeah. Therefore, it's very important. It's just like you go to a mathematics class, you know, and you go to first grade, then you go to second grade. You don't go 1 + 1 and then 1 × 1 and then you suddenly jump down to, you know, biometrics or calculus and things like that. You may want to, but if you try to do that, you're not going to understand that. No? So same thing, when we go in our Krishna consciousness and we really become over-ambitious, we're going to miss out on a lot of things, you know. I can go to the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, I love Krishna, I don't care about all the Rajarishis, I'll go 10th canto and I'll read the 10th canto, you know. And then I'll fall down because I won't understand why Krishna is doing Rasa dance with so many gopis. Immediately I'm going to think, why can't I dance with so many gopis, right? So that is the phenomenon. That's what happens because we don't go step by step by step. Therefore, it's very important, take every step cautiously. Cross-check yourself that you actually done the first step properly so that you can go on to the next step. You know, you want to build a nice temple, you want to build a nice bungalow for Krishna or whatever, make sure that the foundation is well dug. Then you go in the foundation with proper reinforcement. You know, we can't say, okay, no, I want to see the roof first, so I go, you know. The roof's going to fall on your head, you're going to crash. That's what happens. So, it is important, we build a Krishna conscious foundation. The spiritual foundation has to be very strong. Because if we do that step by step by step, then we will please Guru and Gauranga. Our goal is to please the spiritual master and the devotees and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when we fail to keep the soul active and the activity of the soul connected to our actions, then we fall into the fruitive active. You know, therefore the soul is there, the subtle body is there, but the body is there. And as long as we are only connected to the body and the mind is there, because the ego is there, that I want to be the topmost devotee, I want to be this person, I want to be that person. We all have that tendency. Right? But we go very cautiously and carefully, we will get there. And we will become dynamic also. We can become, like, look at Srila Prabhupada. How long he stayed in Radha-Damodar temple, you know. You know, he was not an ordinary soul, he could have gone, but he performed this leela so that we could understand that tapasya is a necessity of life. I hope that answers you, sir.
Hare Krishna. You use the analogy of the orange peel and the orange and how we have to get past the peel in order to really...
to get to the fruit.
Yeah. I've noticed, this is my third year here in Vrindavan, and for someone who has as many anarthas as I do, it's really difficult for a human being like myself to be a good devotee like everyone else. I constantly feel like, you know, I'm not good enough, or maybe someone's like ball binding against me. So how do we have that perseverance to get to the fruit?
Nice question again. In the 13th chapter, I would humbly advise you read from sloka number 8 to 12, where Prabhupada describes the qualities of a Vaishnava or a devotee. You know? And in that, he starts by explaining the importance of humility. You know, and in the concluding paragraphs, because there are several pages there, in the concluding paragraphs, he says that if you fail to embrace humility, you know, then even if you have all the other qualities, you will fail. So there's the first thing is humility. It's very important. It's a good thing you are realizing something. We all have anarthas, and the sooner we realize the level of our anarthas, the better, because that will show where we lie in the zone of humility. You know? And then if we are humble enough to recognize, to realize and be responsible where we are failing, then we can correct ourselves step by step. Sometimes we can correct ourselves, it's a simple process, and then other times, you know, we hear the katha and we pick up good points and we say, wow, actually I can do that also, it will help me, you know. And there are other times when you see senior devotees here, then go out of your way. Say, Sutakriti Prabhu, can I meet you for 10 minutes or 15 minutes? You know, something like that. It makes a big difference when you meet them and you talk to them about your personal kind of internal conflict. Then you will find that when they tell you some pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, their personal experiences, you know, that helps us a long way in our personal spiritual life. It's good that we realize that, because if we don't, then that means we are still on a platform of illusion. In the, like what Prabhupada said here, less class you know, low class intelligent students. So we are all initially low class intelligent students by doing savanam, by taking association, by interacting with the devotees, by chanting and doing our nam seva seriously. Then we will develop that purity that will help us to come up. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Hare Krishna. Okay, last question. I think we're running out. Can you keep the mic a little bit? You're echoing, so I can't understand.
You gave the example of the king. He killed the puppy.
Yeah.
So whether he was inclined to kill or not, but he killed him. So sometimes, so many times, we want to do something which we are not supposed to do, and by forcing, the things happen. So can you explain something about that?
Whenever we commit a crime, you know, as devotees, we make offenses to other devotees, we should look at it as a serious crime, you know. Because Krishna forgives us, you know, for almost everything except for when you offend a devotee, you know. And the tendency, this is because you're saying that we do something wrong, this is one of the most commonest things we do, is we offend devotees. You know? So therefore we should become very responsible. We should become self-accountable. Every day you can look at yourself and say, what did I do today? How much, you know, like we used to do Sankirtan in Bhaktivedanta manner, that's where I joined, and we would be out from 8 in the morning till 8 or 9 at night. And we came back and we all got together and we would say, okay, how many books you distributed? What was your experience, you know? And we were buzzing, you know, and hardly wanting to sleep so we could get up by 2:30 or 3 in the morning. You know, we were accountable for our practices, and that saved us from being in a situation where we commit offenses. If we are consistently active, you know, then there will be no opportunity. But when we slow down, when we think, well, I've done 8 hours today, I've done 10 hours today, so I can relax. That is when you are cutting yourself away from Krishna, and that's where you start doing things that you're not supposed to be doing. You know? But if you are consistently engaged, you will not do that. And if you do commit an offense, then immediately you should take action and correct yourself. You know? Be humble enough. Remember, without humility, you cannot make progress in your spiritual life. So be humble enough, admit to yourself, and if something is very serious, admit to the authorities or say, look, I made this mistake, I'm planning to atone like this. Do you have any other suggestions? You know, or go for the atonement. It's not like you have to atone for 12 years, one day, 2 days, do some extra chanting, you know. Go and serve the devotees instead of eating prasadam, go and serve the devotees. You know? This way you will see these anathas will be out. Don't give them a chance. You give them a chance, they'll come to you. You get what you invite. Okay. Thank you so much. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Nitai Guru.